Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
They printed off all the phone records, and you know, I had answered everything I could answer and called everyone I knew, and I was at a loss for what more I could do to help, and just sitting there was not helping anybody. So I eventually went back to work and we moved forward. You know, it has been 10 years, and closure would definitely be helpful, and it would be good for a lot of reasons and a lot of people. My big fear all along has been, well, no matter what, we're not going to have a good outcome. We know that. But I do think that at this point, it's safe to say that we're likely not going to find him alive.
On March 31st, 2010, 31-year-old Jacob Cavanaugh went to work and spent the evening playing frisbee golf with friends. One of the friends reported that Jacob dropped him off at his car when they were finished playing frisbee golf. And Jacob said he was going back to his house to finish a paper he was writing that was due soon. However, Jacob never made it back to the home he shared with his mom. And a few days later, his mother reported him missing to the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office. There were a few sightings and financial transactions in the days after Jacob disappeared. But after April 2nd, 2010, Jacob Cavanaugh was never seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 233 of The Vanished, Jacob Cavanaugh's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. At 31, Jacob Cavanaugh found himself single again after a decade-long marriage. He had two kids whom he cherished and adored. He was going back to school, hoping to study nursing, and was a member of the National Guard. He longed to become an active duty service member in the military, but was working on overcoming some obstacles that had prevented that. Still, life was getting back on track for Jacob after his divorce, and he had many dreams for the future. At the time, he was living with his mom in Traverse City, Michigan. For this story, we wanted to go back in time and learn about the events that had shaped who Jacob was as an adult. So we spoke to one of his sisters, Sandra, to learn more about Jacob.
Well, the first five of us are all 1 year apart. We're all births really quick together. And the last four were separated by some absent time. So Jake was probably, I believe he's 8 years younger than me. So we all took care of each other. My mom did not work until probably 85 or 86. At that point, it was the older kids helping with the younger kids. Jacob is a fun kid, adventurous kid, loved making things, biking, anything adventurous. He did get in trouble a little bit. I don't know. He was just such an interesting person. I was trying to figure things out, even when they were slightly dangerous. One time when I was with my boyfriend, we had met just before my senior year, so Jacob would have been 10 or 11 at that point. We stopped back by my mom's house to get something, and
He had his towel in his hands, and his sex ed was in his towel. And I said, "What are you doing, kid?" And he pulled his head up, and he said, "I think I made a mistake." And his face was in the towel still. And put the towel back on his face, got him in the vehicle, rushed him to the hospital. He had, out of pure curiosity, wanted to know what would happen if you drop a match into a can of diesel fuel. And the flames had come up and taken his face off. And he lost probably 2 inches into his hairline. No eyelashes, no eyebrows. I mean, literally, I could see his face in the towel. And I knew that the wind was going to bother him. So we had the windows up and just trying to keep him comfortable, got him to the ER, and he had second and third degree burns on his face. His recovery was humbling. So this kid went through Silvodyne, a mesh mask, wearing a big sombrero, basically, for a full summer, because this was early in the summer that this happened. And it was humbling because he really realized how people treat people that are different. Well, he didn't want to eat with us. He ate in his bedroom because he didn't want to repulse us. And he really clung to our oldest brother, Joe, at that time, which was really weird because, you know, Joe is 4 years older, so he would have been 12 years older. So it just, the age gap was just so different. Joe spent a lot of time with him one-on-one through that time of his life. His saving grace is that he didn't inhale at the time. Otherwise, it would have gone down his into his lungs. He was just a kid. You can see the lightness of his skin, though. He has always looked a little bit lighter since that incident. But I just think that when you go through that, you're a different person. So I think his selfishness and all of that kind of, it left him at that time. When you're trying to get along with people in school, I mean, kids can be cruel.
After the accident with the fire, Jacob had gotten into some minor trouble as a teenager when he experimented with drugs and committed a few petty crimes. He was sent to a juvenile rehabilitation program, and his experiences there seemed to shape the person he would become as an adult. Sandra told us more.
I can't remember how much time he spent away, but he went to like a juvie center. There was a lot that my mom did not share with the rest of us. I believe he was dabbling in drugs at that time. I don't know what drugs, but he was hanging out with the wrong people. And this was like 13, 14. He was a new person. He was very regimented. I think it was something like a military place because he had to have order. That's why it was no surprise when he went into the National Guard because he liked things in order, you know, and that type of thing. He was a scholar. He went to college. He was a master mechanic and decided that he didn't want to work on cars for a profession because it was taking the fun out of it. So he was going back to school to get some preliminary classes done. He was looking at nursing program and how he could get into that kind of a program with his record as a juvenile. So he was working on and having all that expunged and being able to move on with his career.
We also spoke to Jacob's ex-wife, Rachel. She told us about some of the things Jacob went through as a teen and shared her perspective with us.
I think he had been in and out of some different juvenile detention centers around the time I started hanging out with him. And then I know he went, you know, he went to prison boot camp for the home invasion. He was probably 17, maybe. I was 16, 17. You know, I think he had been in trouble for maybe shoplifting and other little crimes prior to that. But I didn't know him well prior to that. So I know he went to Catholic school. So his mom was a single mom trying to raise several children on her income. So I know that was a struggle. And he went to Catholic school until late high school. I'm not exactly sure when. That's why I met him through friends, not at school, although I would see him on the bus too, because the bus would come to the, seems like he would ride the same bus. But I think it was just an overwhelming thing, and you're trying to, single mom trying to care for a lot of children, you don't know what to do or how to help him make different decisions.
As a young teen, Jacob had struggled in school and seemed disinterested in most subjects. One of nine children, Jacob's family was large and cared for solely by their mother, a single mother who worked outside of the home and took care of all of her children. Jacob's parents had divorced and his dad moved to Pennsylvania and started a new family. One of the things we asked Sandra was how that affected Jacob.
We all struggled with dad issues, though, because my dad is an alcoholic, and so he was not around. He worked in the oil industry, so he would literally, I thought he was just coming home to get my mom pregnant again and then leave, and then he'd come back for a birth, and then he'd leave. I mean, that's why, you know, we're all kind of, the first five of us were all together, and then we're spaced a little bit. So he was a very absent father, and that's the opposite of what Jacob wanted to be. You know, he knew what that was like growing up, so he was always there for his boys. So, in that regard, we all have mental issues.
Despite getting into some trouble as a teenager, Jacob had goals for himself and went on to achieve some of those goals.
We're Catholic, so we were in parochial school, and Jacob struggled in parochial school, so I think at one point my mom pulled him out and put him in the public school system, thinking that maybe a different group of people, and they offered different things in public school. So he graduated from the other school, the public high school. After high school, he got his master mechanic, and he did that for a couple of years, and then he joined the National Guard because, how many of my brothers? Jesse went to the Army, Jay went to the Coast Guard, and then Jay re-enlisted and went to National Guard. And I think Jay is the one that got him thinking about the Guard and what else you can do with your life and the skills you can learn, got Jacob enrolled from there. And then Jacob started going to school as well. He was just getting his basics, but he was leaning towards nursing if he could get rid of his record.
When we spoke to his ex-wife, Rachel, with whom he had continued to maintain a cordial relationship after their divorce, we asked her how she met Jacob.
Jake and I met through mutual friends in middle school. We dated off and on around ninth grade. And then in the summer of 1997, we moved in together. And we had our first son, Jacob, in January of 98. We were married July 25th of 1998. And then we had Xander in December of 2003. And we divorced in July of 2008. He was smart. He was kind. He always was willing to help people with auto repairs. He was funny, and he was a very hard worker. We were young. I mean, we got married when I was 18, so we sort of grew up together. So it was a struggle financially, and I think we both did a tremendous amount of growth in that 10 years. You know, he had become successful mechanic and fully certified and was able to get into the National Guard. So that was a lot of growth. And I, you know, got a good full-time job and multiple promotions. And so when we had bought a home together in 2000, and so I was only 19, I think, at that time. So he was a year and a half older than me. So we did well for how young we were and all that was stacked against us. But he always wanted to join the military for as long as I knew him. And then early 2008, he joined the National Guard. We went through quite a lot of hoops to allow him to join the National Guard. We had to get letters of recommendation and things. We tried to get it expunged, but we couldn't do that. So we did the letters of recommendation. He wanted to go active duty. He always had wanted to. But I don't know why he didn't or couldn't. He was an automotive mechanic. He did work at a Honda dealership for many years. And then when he went missing, though, he was working at Dave's Garage. He would often worry that, you know, his hands and body might not be able to keep up with wrenching for many, many years. So he had been attending Northwestern Michigan College. He enjoyed it.
We also talked to Jacob's close friend, Ken, who told us about his friendship with Jacob and shared some of his memories with us.
I mean, Jake is always going to be family to me. We are definitely not blood family, but we spent so much time together. When I first met Jake, I met him, I'm 38 now, so I must have been 19, maybe 20. I had just gotten I just dropped out of high school, went and got my GED so I could go to school to be a cop. I ended up going to NMC to do their which is a college up here, to be a police officer, to do our Michigan program. You got to do, it's called MCOLS. Anyways, I was got a job working for Honda, the Honda dealer up here, and that's where I met him. And Jake is just one of those dudes. He had that personality where you couldn't avoid him. You just wanted to talk to him because he was so funny and goofy, and he never seemed like there was a point in life that he did not like. Rachel and him, I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time with Rachel by any means, but I know there were times that she didn't like me because me and him would go out. And I think she thought, because I was younger than him, that I was trying to like get him to, you know, like meet chicks or something, you know, but it was never nothing like that. He never talked ill about her. I think he truly loved her. It was the mother of his kids. As far as that goes, me and Rachel just didn't see eye to eye, I guess, on certain things. And I don't know why she never really liked me, but I think it just had to do with him wanting to hang out with a buddy or something. But when they got divorced, he still never talked bad about her. Very, very protective of her. I would go with Jake to pick up the kids and stuff. The kids would come to my house to play. I had a skate park in my basement. Super cool. It was tons of fun. We had a lot of good times there. I know a lot of the pictures that were on that Facebook thing were from my house. Like, it's odd to look at that and see that. Me and my wife are now divorced years after all that happened. But, I mean, she loved Jake. No one in my family did not love Jake. It was amazing. He would go down and spend time with my cousins and stuff, and my grandparents. Go ice fishing with my grandpa Hacker, who's not, he's my cousin's grandpa. You know what I mean? He just got really close with our family, and I never thought that there was anything, he never had anything vengeful against Rachel. He just wanted to protect her and the kids even after they divorced. Jake never once complained about child support. He never complained about money in general. So, like, at one point, people were saying, oh, it was a money thing. No, it wasn't.
On March 31st, 2010, Jacob spent the evening playing frisbee golf with some friends, and then gave his friend, Gary Wittig, a ride back to his car. Gary later told police that Jacob said he was going to go home and finish a paper for a course he was taking at a local college. But Jacob didn't make it home, and a mysterious series of events took place over the next few days. After April 2nd, 2010, Jacob dropped off the map and has not been seen in the decade since. We were able to obtain a detailed police file in this case, and it provided us with a timeline of Jacob's movements after he failed to make it home on the night of the 31st. This is what we know. After dropping Gary off, Jacob stopped at several gas stations and convenience stores starting in Traverse City, Michigan, and making his way south with his final stop in the state of Michigan in a town called Matawan in the early morning hours of April 1st. Jacob then used his cell phone to make his required monthly check-in call with the National Guard at 2:30 p.m. on April 1st. That call pinged off of a tower in Springfield, Missouri. This is the last time his cell phone was used, and after this time, the phone died or was powered down. In the early morning hours of April 2nd, Jacob's license plate was run by police officers twice. The first was around 12 a.m. at a rest stop in Hollister, Missouri. The second was around 3:40 a.m. in West Fork, Arkansas at a gas station. What we don't know is if Jacob spoke to any officers, or if they just ran his license plate because he was driving in the middle of the night with out-of-state plates. The next stop occurred at 11:30 a.m. at a convenience store in Ardmore, Oklahoma, where Jacob's debit card was declined. Several hours later, his card was used again, this time successfully, at a gas station in Fort Worth, Texas. A final debit card transaction was made at another gas station west of Fort Worth in Sweetwater, Texas. After that, all of Jacob's movements cease. But that isn't where the trail ends. 7 years later, in 2017, a Carfax report on Jacob's vehicle history revealed that the VIN number on his car that was also missing along with him was run in Mexico at an unknown time and location, but most likely at a scrapyard. There has been no trace of Jacob since that last stop at a gas station in West Texas on April 2nd, 2010. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Starting with the beginning of the timeline and before Jacob vanished, we wanted to know in more detail what had taken place. You'll hear both Sandra and Rachel refer to a Detective Gomez, who was the original detective assigned to Jacob's case, who is now retired. One thing we asked Sandra about was what was going on in Jacob's life around that time.
Rachel and him had divorced. I believe they were divorced 2 years before he disappeared. They were co-parenting. So he would get the kids, I believe, on the weekends, and their relationship was always kind of strained because we were brought up standing in lines for food and things like that, where Rachel's family was more well off. So she expected things in their marriage, and Jacob just couldn't get them for her. He would work extra hours. He still loved her. He just couldn't give her what she needed. They respected each other after divorce. The only thing that really sticks out is on Sunday before he disappeared, I lived right down the alley from where Jacob was living. He was staying with my mom. So he would come down to my house and we would visit. And on the Sunday before he disappeared, he was at my house. And we were talking and he's like, I got this test coming up, I'm studying. And, you know, he was talking about having to write a paper or something like that. He was taking college courses. I guess what gets me was, if you're going to leave, why would you keep doing your homework? Why would you even bother caring about your homework? Why would you even, he didn't come home that night. My mom was worried. So the next day of not hearing from him again, she called the police and they said, you have to wait a week. So then we went, it was actually Monday when mom received statements from the bank saying your card was used and there were no funds. And that would have been Sweetwater and the Fort Worth. That we went to the police on Monday and they told us again, you have to wait. So we contacted the media, had an interview with the media on Tuesday. And that's when the police said, we'll investigate.
After learning that Jacob's card had been used in multiple states, Sandra wanted the police to start checking to see if he had traveled on any toll roads. Was his car picked up on camera? If it was Jacob the person driving? Sandra was also puzzled by the phone call Jacob made to the National Guard. Why would he make his monthly call to the National Guard if he planned to disappear forever?
If you know that you're not going to have access to your accounts, why would you make that phone call to let the National Guard know you're still in school? There's too many things that just do not add up to me. There's a couple people that the police are still looking into. I think the first officer we had, the first detective, really thought men leave and your brother got overwhelmed and he just left. There's not a crime here. You can see he used his credit card after he left, so there's no crime. I think that's where he left it. I think he was okay with that answer, but there's just too many other questions. A new detective has taken the case. It was in 2018.
Though they had been divorced for 2 years, Jacob and Rachel co-parented their children together in a friendly relationship, and Jacob always paid his child support and remained active in the lives of his children. When we talked to Rachel, we asked her how she found out that Jacob was missing.
I received a phone call, and I can't remember exactly who called me, but they were asking if I had heard from him or knew where he was. It was probably within a day or 2 days of his, actually, so he was last seen on a Wednesday night, and I believe it was maybe a Friday, Thursday night or Friday morning when I received the call. I think it was his mom, but it might have been Sandra. It was like I instantly knew it was abnormal and a little bit of panic. I could tell something wasn't right. So I started calling mutual friends and people that I knew. And I was actually on vacation with the kids and we ended up coming back early because of that. And then I just remember being sort of paralyzed for a couple of weeks until somebody said, I think it was one of the kids' principals that told me, you know, you have to get back to normalcy. Normalcy is healthy for the kids. And I thought, yeah, you know, you're right. I do, because I'm not able to help. I've done everything I can do to help, which was provide phone records because he was on my phone plan. So I printed off all the phone records and, you know, I had answered everything I could answer and called everyone I knew. And I was at a loss for what more I could do to help. And just sitting there was not helping anybody. So I eventually went back to work and we moved forward.
Jacob and his friend Ken spent a lot of time together around the time Jacob disappeared. So Ken knew something was wrong when Jacob stopped answering his phone. Here's more on that.
And at that point, I was working at, they changed their name, but it was Cox and Sons Distribution, which was a Budweiser plant. And it was literally right down the street from my house and his mother's house after he had moved in with his mom at this point. And I was working nights. I was going in at 3 and working until sometimes 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And if I needed cigarettes or anything, I'd call him up and he'd just run them up. And I just remember getting a phone call from the girlfriend at that point. He had a girlfriend that he had met in college while he was going to the college. He was like a week away from getting his degree. He was going to be one of the first people to finish this new program at NMC. Anyways, she called me and it was between like 10 and midnight. And she goes, I haven't heard from Jake all day. What's going on? And she knew that I was the person to call to find him. Jake never answered my phone calls. That's why I got weirded out when I called him right after that and he didn't answer. Because like I was saying, I was working nights at Budweiser and if I needed a pack of smokes or a soda, he'd run up to the shell that was right next there for me because I couldn't leave and get the stuff for me.
The timeline left us with many questions. And one of the biggest questions after seeing the number of stops made at gas stations was if there was any surveillance footage. If there was it Jacob driving the car? This is what Sandra told us.
I think it's Detective Gomez that said, yes, that was him on the video. The rest of us looked at it and said, that doesn't look like anything like him.
Sandra explained to us that at one of Jacob's stops in Cadillac, Michigan, he took $120 out of his bank account. He then got gas in Kalamazoo, Michigan. But after that, he didn't get gas again using his card until he was in Texas. And he couldn't have made it that far on a single tank of gas. Sandra doesn't know if he used his cash along the way, or if someone else could have been with him in the car and paid for the gas. She also told us that Jacob didn't own a pair of cargo shorts like the man seen on the video. Could he have stopped to buy some shorts along the way? If so, did he purchase them using his cash?
A year after he disappeared, I had major abdominal surgery and I was off work for 6 weeks. So on week two, when I'm finally discharged from the hospital, I convinced my husband to go on a road trip and follow the credit card. I said, I want to go to every place that that card was used. I want to see it at that time of night or day that it was used. And we did that. And so we did have to stop more for gas. But when we got to that Fort Worth ExxonMobil, where they said there are no cameras on the pumps, we walked inside, and I videotaped all of it. We walked inside that ExxonMobil, and I asked, is this the, because we had the receipt, so I know what mobile number it was. So they said, yeah, this is the station. There were 6 video cameras inside the building. But the original detective, Detective Gomez, said, that doesn't matter. He paid it at the pump, so he never went in.
The fact that the detective wouldn't look at the footage from inside the gas station was a major source of frustration for Sandra. She understood that her brother paid at the pump, but what if he went inside to use the restroom, like many of us would do on a long road trip?
You pay at the pump and you walk inside to use the restroom because you don't know when you're going to stop again. I said, why would you not pull the video from that place? And he said, he paid at the pump. We don't need to. And that's when I said, well, there had to have been someone with him because who else bought gas this whole time? Why don't we look at the video to find out who the other person is? Let's go 20 minutes before and after the card was used.
Despite Sandra's pleas to the detective, the footage from inside that gas station was never viewed.
And then the next time he gassed up was in Sweetwater. But it's not far enough away per mileage for his gas mileage for his car to need to do a fill-up at that spot. He didn't need to fill up at Sweetwater. And the video from Sweetwater, from that station, shows Jacob's vehicle pulling in from town, not from the highway. That's where it showed the person wearing cargo shorts that Jacob didn't own. And that's the way when we drove to Texas, that's the way we drove. We stopped at the store in Buckley. We stopped at the gas station in Cadillac. We went to the place in just outside of Kalamazoo. We videotaped the whole thing just so we could see if the video shows him walking in this door, what's in that door or what's out that door. Is that the diesel pumps or is that the regular pumps? I mean, people probably thought we were bizarre. I have all this video of, you know, and then we videotape as much as we could of all the places. It was kind of weird being inside a store videotaping, but.
Jacob's ex-wife, Rachel, also viewed the surveillance footage, and she shared with us what her opinion is on whether or not the male in the video is Jacob.
Well, you can't see his face because unfortunately when he walks into the store, or when he walks by or moves, I can't remember, but the door opens and it blocks the camera from his face. But I mean, personally, when I saw the video, it looked like his body language and dynamics and shape, the chest area. But, you know, it's been a lot of years since I've seen the video, and maybe I wanted it to be him. I don't know.
Opinions on the surveillance videos vary, but Jacob's friend Ken is certain that the person in the video is Jacob. This is what he shared with us.
I truly believe at the gas station in Sweetwater that the footage was him. And I explained to Detective Gomez, I explained to him when the car pulls in, and this is where me and the family had differed at one point. At least that's what Detective Gomez told me, the original detective. The damage on the front end of this car, they don't believe it had been there, but I know for 100% it was there. And the reason they don't believe it is because originally there was damage there and he had saved up money and just had it fixed, not with insurance. And me and him were at my house. His mother lived right down the street from me, not maybe a mile at the most. It's all like little subdivision neighborhood. And he left my house at like 2 o'clock in the morning and we'd had a couple beers and it was super icy. And it was, I mean, maybe a week after getting it fixed, and he hit a little tree right in the exact same spot. And he was super, super embarrassed about that. So when you see the video of him pulling into Sweetwater, I think they believed that the car was still fixed from him having it fixed, but it wasn't. It was new damage, just in the exact same spot. I mean, like, I'm talking millimeters off of it. And he was just really, really embarrassed about that. So when they seen the video, is what I'm guessing from Detective Gomez, is that they didn't think it could be his car. But I knew it was his car because I knew he had damaged it. I was 100% positive because, yeah, you can't see a clear picture through that window. And just as you're about to get the clear picture, when the door opens in the gas station and the sun glints off that metal rail and it blinds the actual good view, I know it's really irritating, but it is at least, I was 99% sure that it was him. And the reason being is I had spent so much time with him, especially riding with him in his car, and he was really bad about locking his doors, but he would always put his wallet right near his gear selector. I ended up cutting a trap into the front of his gear selector so he could at least put his wallet down there if he wasn't going to lock his doors. And he's a real tall, skinny, well, not super tall, but he was a real skinny guy. And the officers, when the guy first pulls in the video to the gas pump, he bends way over in the front seat and then comes back. And at first, when I'm watching the video, I didn't really catch it, but then he gets out and he puts gas in the car and doesn't come into the store, even though you're praying the guy does, so you could know for sure, but doesn't. And at this point, I'm like, man, it kind of looks like him. You know, it's a tall, skinny, goofy looking guy. But then after he finishes filling up and he gets back in his car, I seen him lean way back over again. And that's when I told Detective Gomez, stop. That's when it clicked in my head that he was putting his wallet back in that spot. In my head, I knew it was Jake, but I mean, that's not to say that, you know, if somebody took his car from him or whatever, that he didn't show him. But I mean, who's going to keep using that to put their wallet in there? The video in Sweetwater, there's nobody else in the car unless they were down on the floor in the back seat, you know, and they'd have to be tiny person. You couldn't see it, or they were in the trunk. You know what I mean? That kind of a deal. You cannot see anybody in the car with him, because when it pulls in, it's coming towards the camera. It does like a, almost like a little U-turn to get up to the gas pump. And then when he pulls out, he just pulls out past the camera. But it's because the camera, the way it's angled, is going through the window of the gas station. But a customer walks in and the door opens just as he's about to be completely in view. But as the door opens, the sun glints off the metal railing around the glass of the door. Do you get what I'm saying? It makes it so you can't see anything. It's like looking right up at the sun type of deal. And then the door closes and you can't see him for a second until he gets back in the car. But now it's through the window again, so it's not clear footage. In my head, I'm 99% sure, you know, that it's him just by the size of the person, the way they walk, the way they get back in the car and put away the wallet. I mean, even if it wasn't him and somebody got his wallet from him at some point and knew that was down there, the motion just didn't seem right. And when they put it away, that's when it had clicked for me. And then Detective Gomez let me watch it a few more times, and he asked me too, do you think it's him? And I said, I'm not going to say 100%, but, you know, in my head, it's about 99%. And then it's nothing after that.
Another question that we had from the timeline was about Jacob's check-in with the National Guard. This didn't make sense, so we asked Rachel why he would be making this call and what the significance of it was.
Well, it showed that he called after he was last seen. He had called the VA for his, I think he would get like a student, you're going to school and you're in the military and it's a grant that they pay the GI Bill. Yeah, so we saw that he called for that. He did stay current on his child support, and I know it was financially a struggle for him, but he was He cared about his credit. He cared about making sure the kids are financially taken care of.
Rachel also told us that she was able to get into Jacob's voicemail. His voicemail box was full. She was able to listen to the messages, but unfortunately, there were no clues to be found there. All of the messages were people calling to look for Jacob. Rachel told us what she thought about the small clue that the car may have been in a Mexican scrapyard.
I think it's significant when the car arrived at that junkyard or what shape it was in. No details are available that I'm aware of. Detective Posen told me last week that he had come across the police had an interaction with him in Arkansas on April 2nd, 2010, where he was sleeping in his car. But it would be interesting to know what his, you know, who was he alone? What was he? But any details and why it took 10 years to find that out is interesting to me, too. So I don't know. I'd be curious to hear more about that.
Everyone we talked to for this story indicated that there was no reason Jacob would go to Texas. He didn't know anyone there aside from his brother who was stationed at Fort Hood at the time. He had a job and was going to school, and there didn't appear to be any reason for Jacob to travel so far away. As we read the police records, some of the actions of Jacob's acquaintances brought some possibilities to light. For example, Jacob's friend Gary disappeared for a few days at the same time, and then suddenly resurfaced the next week, appearing nervous and agitated when asked to talk about Jacob. If you remember from earlier in this episode, Gary's one of the friends that Jacob had been playing frisbee golf with, and also the friend that said Jacob dropped him off at his car. He claimed that Jacob planned to go home and work on some school assignments. Police have had little success in interviewing Gary over the years. And there's another man, David Figueroa, perhaps a friend of Gary's and an acquaintance of Jacob's. David's former partner reported to the police that David was known to make trips to Mexico through Brownsville, Texas, where his parents live. He would never allow anyone to accompany him on these trips, and often had money with no apparent origin or job that would have given him large sums of money. He even told a former girlfriend that he quit his job because he was going to make enough money to live off of with the next car he repaired, and then shortly after went on another mysterious trip to Mexico. We don't know where Jacob was headed on this trip, but if you look at a map of all the places he used his credit card, you can see that he left Michigan headed for Texas, but once he hit Fort Worth, he headed west. If he had the intention of going to Brownsville, he was heading in the wrong direction. So the Brownsville theory doesn't completely add up. With this in mind, we asked Sandra what she believed about those in Jacob's life.
I think that there was a sketchy person that he was an acquaintance with who was with him frisbee golfing that night that said Jacob dropped him off at a spot that didn't make any sense to anyone. Because why would you get dropped off at the open space at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock at night? Because the open space is just that. It's an open space. There's nothing down there. That's where you go for a stroll with your sweetheart or to fly a kite or play frisbee. And in March, that's not really where you go to hang out in Traverse City. I think that person was in trouble and had to do a drug run. And he talked Jacob into driving him. I think that's why there's another person. And also, his mother couldn't find him that weekend and was calling around asking anyone if they knew where he was. So he was also gone for those few days. But he reappeared on Monday. And the original interview with him was not even face-to-face. It was, yeah, I called that guy and he said this is where he was. He was at a hotel with a hooker for the whole weekend. And we're like, that's not even his personality. It didn't fit, but the original detective just took that as his word. So no, I think that person is involved. I think he came back and started a business with his mom. And where do you get startup money when you're just a kid? I mean, there's just too many things. They're just like, how is he walking around still? He knows something. It was really weird. The first couple of months, he would stop by my house. And because my son was someone that he knew as well, they had mutual friends. and just kind of say, hey, how's everything going? You know, just kind of trying to find out if we know anything. Everything about him just screams he knows something.
Sandra also told us that they wondered if Jacob's online activities could hold any clues. She said that they went through Jacob's work computer and also her computer because he used to come over to do work at her house. As far as she's aware, they found nothing that was helpful to the investigation.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. We also wanted to speak with law enforcement to learn more about Jacob's footsteps, the sketchy people he may have been hanging out with, and the surveillance footage of Jacob in Texas. We spoke with Detective Jason Polzine with the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office in Michigan. First, we asked him to introduce himself and explain how he came to investigate Jacob's case.
Jason Polzine. And currently I'm a detective with Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Department. I've been here for almost 20 years. And I guess I got into law enforcement following my father's footsteps, who had about 30 years as well in law enforcement. His mother, Mavis Klaus, reported him as a missing person on April 4th, 2010. And I guess it was not until the 7th when they actually sent an officer out to take a formal complaint because more time had passed, and I think at first they wanted to just see if he would return home.
Supervisor Captain Randy Fulis also participated in the interview, and he shared with us what he does as well.
My name is Randy Fulis. I'm currently the detective captain with the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office. I've been here with Grand Traverse County for a little over 25 years, and no family in law enforcement. Just I think since the time I was about 5 years old, knew I wanted to be in this profession and just kind of carried that dream forward. So, and have enjoyed my career here.
We asked Detective Polzine how his department usually responds to missing adults.
The road responds first and gathers initial information. And then, depending on the nature, the circumstances, then the detective bureau gets involved. And that'll mean search warrants for bank records, for phone records, neighborhood canvases, talking with employers, supervisors, family, just trying to develop leads and figure out what's going on or you know, perhaps a direction of travel or where the person might have gone or went to or who they met up with or talked with, and just try to generate a lead and as far as where they went or who they're with.
This case has so many strange aspects. We wanted to know what the police thought of Jacob's disappearance, so we asked them if they believed it was voluntary or involuntary. This is what Detective Polzin said.
Yeah, that's kind of a tough question. It, you know, different family members have different feelings, different opinions. You know, there's a college kid. There was some debt because of college, obviously, and then child support because of a recent divorce. So it's kind of at this point, it's hard to say. There was no, you know, he never called one person or never left an email or a note behind. So I think at this point there's just speculation. I don't think we can say one way or the other.
At this point, with all the information and the investigations that's been done over the past 10 years, there's nothing definitive to say that him being missing is either voluntary or involuntary, or as far as any persons of interest, we don't have anyone in particular that we can definitively say had something to do with his disappearance. When it comes to Mr. Kavanaugh, again, based on the information from the initial detectives, what they did and what they were able to find out and what we've done since, is that we don't have anything to indicate to us that his leaving the Traverse City area was anything but voluntary. There's some video from downstate Michigan, which we have him, which it appears he's by himself and traveling south voluntarily. Whether or not he met up with somebody when he got to the state of Texas is something that we would be very interested in. But, you know, we don't have a whole lot to go on with any Texas leads. We've got a little bit of video from Texas from places where he was or his credit card was used. So there are things that we've basically exhausted the follow-up that we can do at this point. We did receive a little bit of information that his vehicle, at least, was in Mexico at one point back around the time that of his disappearance or after. Whether or not Jacob was with his vehicle is something that we couldn't say he was or was not with the vehicle, but we know that his vehicle at one point did end up crossing the border and going into Mexico. We use that Carfax for police. We've got a hit on that as far as that vehicle being in Mexico, but there wasn't anything really much to follow up on as far as a place where it was or anything like that.
Yeah, the VIN, I initially contacted Carfax and they forwarded me to the NICB, or National Insurance Crime Bureau. They had a record of the VIN being run one time in Mexico, but they couldn't give me a region. They thought most likely a scrapyard, but they couldn't tell me a year or anything else. That's all they had on that.
Finally, we asked the police what they're looking for in this case and the best way to contact them if you have information.
Well, there was some credit card transaction down in the state of Texas. Obviously, that's, you know, not just around the corner. So I guess if there's any leads in this case that could develop, you know, perhaps it's going to come out of the state of Texas in and around where the cards were used. And I guess that's probably the big help in this case, is if there's something out there in Texas or someone out there in Texas that saw or knew of Jacob, that would be helpful. Obviously, it'd be helpful if they left a name and a phone number, but an anonymous tip would be helpful as well. 231-995-5000.
Jacob's brothers and sisters all have different opinions on what they believe happened to their brother on that spring night over 10 years ago. And while some of the theories seem more likely than others, there are many possibilities in this story. When we talked to Sandra, she shared with us some of the other thoughts that have crossed her mind about what happened to Jacob.
There's theories that Jacob walked away and to start a new life. And, you know, I've heard Rachel say things like, you know, when we were vacationing in Mexico, Jake thought it would be a fun place to actually live and just be a mechanic in Mexico. And I wanted to just put it out there that as a master mechanic, he had $20,000 worth of tools and he didn't take anything with him. Not one of his tools was missing from his toolbox at work. And we still have them. My uncle has them in his barn, just locked up, waiting for Jake to show up. But if you're going to be a mechanic, you should take something. And he didn't even have his phone charger. I mean, he didn't pack a bag, didn't take his toothbrush, his passport, his phone charger, nothing. He never came back to my mother's house.
He never made it back to the house after frisbee golfing. That's what makes me think he was just maybe just supposed to run downstate and didn't make it. There was one report. A man had contacted the sheriff and said, hey, I saw Jacob Cavanaugh at a sporting goods store just south of the Chicago area. And I know that's how you drive that way and then you can go straight down to get to Texas. And he said that when he saw him in the store, he looked out of sorts and confused. But then the person didn't want to give any information or anything because he wasn't supposed to be there himself. His wife thought he was somewhere else and that would have outed him. So Detective Gomez said that's a dead lead because we can't verify it or whatever you call that. But I thought that's awfully bizarre, you know, that someone would say, I remember seeing that guy.
Jacob's friend Ken told us his thoughts on what happened to Jacob.
Knowing him and as much time as I spent with him, I personally do not believe, A, he would have left them little boys. B, he would have given up those degree he was about to, I swear it was like a week away from, and he was so excited about it. I've never seen somebody so excited about going to school. And C, his family and friends loved him, and the guy never complained about a thing. So if I had to guess, if for some reason he got it in his head to take off and do a little trip, because that's a thing. Our area up here, it's beautiful. There's all kinds of nature trails and stuff. Once you get out of the city here, there's state parks, national parks, all kinds of stuff. And I would get mad at him for going out there by himself. I would get mad at him for going out there and doing stuff like that by himself. I didn't want nothing to happen to him. He was an adventurer. He wanted to live life for sure. And if he did just get in his car to go for a drive, something had to happen between here and after Sweetwater, because I don't ever see that man leaving the boys behind, leaving that degree, leaving the military, and leaving the rest of us behind. And maybe that's just how people that have lost someone they care about think, but I try to break down everything. But I do truly stand by what I said. Jake was an amazing man. I just hate waking up every single day and having that one of the first or second thoughts that are in my head is, where are you? You know, and it hurts to know that his own boy doesn't. Because if he did this on his own, and that's the thing, I don't know what happened, but if he did it on his own, like, it makes me super angry. I wanted to be like him. I wish I was more like him. It hurts my feelings to think about that, and that's why I hate hearing it when people talk about it. Him doing this, like, if he did it on his own, I mean, because he just wasn't that guy. I just don't see that happening.
There was another strange occurrence that turned out to be a kind gesture being returned to the Cavanaugh family. A weekly ad was placed in a local newspaper that said that Jacob had been missing since March 31st, 2010. Every week, starting almost immediately after his disappearance, this ad appeared in the paper. No one in the Cavanaugh family knew who was placing the ad. So when it didn't appear one week, Jacob's sister Sandra called the paper to find the source. It turns out that a woman named Laura, to whom the Cavanaugh family had once lended a helping hand, was placing the ads each week by calling the newspaper. On the week that the ad didn't appear, Laura was in the hospital. Sandra was able to connect with Laura, who continues to place the weekly ad with Jacob's name, hoping someone will come forward with information. Family members differ on whether they believe Jacob is still alive, but his memory burns in their hearts and minds 10 years later. When we spoke to Jacob's ex-wife, Rachel, we also had the opportunity to speak with his younger son, Xander, who was very young when Jacob disappeared, but wanted to share with us what he remembers of the time his dad was still around.
All I really remember is, I know that he used to skateboard, and he would skateboard with his friends, and I remember, you know, going over to his friend's house where they built a ramp in his basement. And so I think it was my 5th or 6th birthday that I got a skateboard for Christmas. And I still continue to skateboard to this day. That kind of stuck with me. When he was just watching my brother and I remember he never liked us to fight or even wrestle or anything. We could go play outside, you know, just do whatever, but he didn't like us fighting, even if it was just play fighting, we were just wrestling each other.
So what happened to Jacob Cavanaugh after a normal work day and an outing with friends on March 31st, 2010? Was Gary Wittig telling the truth when he reported that Jacob dropped him off at his car? And why was Gary missing for the next few days, only to pop up and act strangely when he was asked about Jacob? Why won't Gary talk with the police? And what about his acquaintance, David Figueroa? Was he making trips back and forth from Michigan to Mexico that involved drugs? Why was he so vague in his answers about why he was traveling to Mexico when pressed for details by his girlfriend? Where was Jacob headed when he left that day? It's clear from what we do know that he was headed to Texas. But what happened after the last stop in Sweetwater? Did Jacob leave life in Michigan to start over in Mexico? Or did something more sinister happen to Jacob? In the 10 years since Jacob was last seen, no one has been able to crack the mystery of why he left Michigan and headed to Texas. Earlier, you heard his friend Ken mention that Jacob had a girlfriend. While we weren't able to reach her, I wanted to mention that she was questioned by police, and she too had no clue why he had left or where he was headed. But police have been able to rule out any possible involvement on her part. There are so many questions in this story and so few answers. Why would Jacob just go on this trip and tell no one his plans? What we do know is that Jacob was tracked through phone records and financial transactions from Michigan to Texas on April 1st and 2nd. We know there's some confusion on whether or not he is the man in the surveillance video, but the car that is seen is almost certainly his. There's no record of Jacob crossing into Mexico. However, we do know that his vehicle identification number was recorded in Mexico, likely at a scrapyard. The rest of the story is filled with questionable friends and motives, a family torn by what they believe happened to Jacob, and two young men who have lost their father, seemingly forever. At the time of his disappearance, Jacob Cavanaugh was 31 years old. He stands at approximately 6 feet tall and weighs around 170 pounds. He has brown hair and brown eyes and is of Chippewa and Ottawa Native American descent. He was last seen wearing his work uniform, which is a dark blue shirt and dark blue pants, but may have also had on a white t-shirt and shorts. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jacob Cavanaugh, you're asked to call the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office at 231-995-5000. You can follow Jacob's story on Facebook at Find Jacob Cavanaugh.
He was, you know, like a lot of us. Yeah, I have a criminal history. That was a big thing with him wanting to, when he met Rachel and he had kids, he grew up. You know what I mean? Said, hey, it's time to stop being stupid and that kind of stuff. And then when he decided, you know, he wanted to really do the military thing, I think for a long time he didn't do it because he was afraid that that would keep him from being able to. But once he got into the National Guard, he realized, you know, your past doesn't have to follow you everywhere.
I did have to petition for a death certificate so that I could get, he was on my mortgage, and so I couldn't refinance or sell. And I also to get Social Security benefits for the children. It's excruciating. I fought them for 7 years. I did have to get the death certificate issued to appease them. That wasn't enough. I ended up eventually going to court for a judge, and every appeal process and every step of the way took months and months. So it wasn't until 2017, the summer of 2017, before the judge finally granted the approval. Hassle factor that it's almost like they purposely put in there, and some people just go away or not be able to follow through. And I think of all those people who are disabled and are not able to advocate for themselves, and they fall through the cracks. They don't get the help that they need or they're entitled to, you know. A big need for advocacy for those folks.
That brings us to the end of episode 233. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Florida. Thanks for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.